Were you just trolling me with the name of this document?
What do you mean?
You call this episode in our show notes, Season 3, Episode 3, Cardboard Einstein.
Let's go. I'm ready.
I don't know if you're serious, though. I don't know if you even know.
Read the rest of the show, Doc.
I mean, I have.
Did I get it right, the rest of the show, Doc?
Oh, you did.
Somebody hasn't done their show prep for this show.
You were just trolling me.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we switch the advantage suit to one our opponent is flush with. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. And I destroy you at Fox in the Forest.
Yeah, I want a rematch. It makes me a little bit sad that you're up a couple of matches in Fox in the Forest over me when you're like, I don't even like trick-taking games.
I'm afraid to tell you this, Mark. A certain percentage of my plays, I didn't know they were really good. I was just like, I'll do this. I'm like, oh, that's actually the optimal play. That's brilliant of me.
I want a rematch.
I'm happy to give you one. The Fox in the Forest has been our go-to trick-taking game. Where does it rank for you as a trick-taking game?
I really enjoy it. I think it's really unique that it's a two-player trick-taking game. Most of the trick-taking games that I'm familiar with are four players because you play in pairs. So having a game that plays with two people, given that I don't play board games in a large group very often, goes a really long way. And I think they handled the elements of the genre really well.
Now I'm going to tease where we're going to go today because we're talking about the name of our game. Do you like the name The Fox in the Forest for this game?
I do, since we're also going to be talking a little bit about theme today. I was going to ask, how does it hit for you in terms of theme? I think the cards are beautiful. I like the names of the different values that exist in the cards. I like the way the mechanics exist in the game. How does the theme hit for you? Do you feel foxes?
I couldn't tell you what is on a single card. I can tell you the action. I can tell you what the 3 does. I can tell you what the 5 does. What's on them? No idea. You could call this game anything, and it's still the trick-taking game I like to play with you. The Spaceman and the Frog. I don't like, if it was called The Spaceman and the Frog, it would feel exactly the same to me. I did not take any of their theme and apply it to like my enjoyment of the game, which is different than what I think we're hoping with our game. I think we're hoping that the title and the theme blend together and helps create the experience. Whereas this, Spaceman and the Frog, I don't know.
Jury's out. I think this is one of those spots where I'm like, oh, I think I really enjoy the art in the game. It plays really well. I couldn't point to a specific way that like playing a 5 makes me feel like I'm a fox, or having the 11 puts me in the forest. Like, it doesn't feel that way to me. But I will say, like, foxes are supposed to be clever creatures. And I do think there's an element of cat and mouse to The Fox in the Forest that I do find interesting and compelling. And I think the art fits the game. I don't think you would want like space battle something as the theme for this game.
I have no issue with the art. I'm saying I don't look at it.
Sure. I'm saying it fits more for me than you're giving it credit for in your assessment. If you had to rename it, what would you call it?
Our game or The Fox in the Forest? Because we're not renaming our game again.
No, Fox in the Forest. If you had to rename Fox in the Forest, what would you rename it?
Oh, trick-taking game. Just put that on the box.
For tricksters.
For tricksters. We'll get to our game when we talk about the other thing. But before we do that, this week's episode is brought to you by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. In a recent video, they talk about Hot Streak being an insta-buy game. And I have to tell you, the next time I see it at a store, I am going to have to buy it. The whole board game community raves about it. In the same video, Board Game Casual was talking about building a sumo theme game, and they showed pictures of their cards, and I was just thinking about MMA Gauntlet. They're doing it. They're beating us to it. Or did Tag Team beat us already? That's also in their latest video, an auto battler game, Mark. You'll never know what you're going to find over there at Board Game Casual. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube, at Board Game Casual channel. The thing. Today's thing is our submission to Cardboard Edison and what we had to do to get there.
I was really hoping that I would Jedi mind trick you into saying Cardboard Einstein at some point in this show.
It's just bad juju. I don't even, don't jinx things, Mark. It's another milestone for us. I kind of put it up there with first exposure playtest hall, something we kind of had our sights on, we worked towards, and we were able to do. I saw Cardboard Edison for the first time last year, just when we were starting to work on Animal Kingdom. We were in no position to enter back then. I did think about the future and I did think, man, I would love to enter Animal Kingdom the following year, which is this year. However, as you know, our path through the galaxy, we ended up on a different game, which, you know, I still say is in the same universe. Our abstract tile placement game is like Animal Kingdom without the animals or political sabotage or campaigning to be the elected leader of the kingdom.
I'm sure there's some quantum mechanic reason why Animal Kingdom is related to our game.
But even when we pivoted last year, I had my eyes set on Cardboard Edison.
Pause for a second. Rewind for me. You're going to make me sound really silly, but more than what is it? Because I've read the submission criteria and all of those things. What was the draw for you?
A couple of things. I think the first one is goals. I think it's important to have goals and be working towards those goals. So it gave us a really good target to shoot for, to have the game ready to submit for this contest. And it also provides a lot of visibility and recognition should we make it to the next step. For anybody not familiar, Cardboard Edison is an award. It's kind of a well-established and well-respected international competition specifically for unpublished board game designs. And it provides visibility and recognition. It provides professional feedback. Even if you're not a finalist, you're going to get feedback. It helps you network, and it also helps you build your pitch skills. Not wholly unlike what we did with the Board Game Geek contest that we entered previously. The bar has been raised now, and I feel like we raised the bar too with what we're submitting.
I agree, because the submission requirements were pretty extensive. There were three large things that we needed to put together in order to be allowed to submit. We needed a description of the game. We needed a 3-minute video that introduces and gives an overview of the game, and we needed a rule book.
And we had to submit those things by the end of January. Then they take February to review them. There's a couple dozen judges that look over the entries, and then they select finalists. The finalists then send in physical prototypes for the judges to play. And then a few months after that, they announce the winners. That's the structure of it. And we needed those three things: description, we needed video, and we needed rules to submit at the end of this month. Mark, why don't you start by giving the description of our game?
Our game is a 2-player tile placement duel where you take turns placing and shifting star tiles, slowly reshaping a shared night sky. Every move changes the board for both players, so nothing ever stays settled for long. Carefully laid plans can fall apart in an instant. You're constantly weighing your next step, pushing your own constellation forward while trying to read what your opponent is building towards. Do you commit to your pattern, block theirs, quietly nudge the sky in a direction that benefits you later? With only a touch of luck involved and the board always in flux, winning comes down to spatial thinking, smart positioning, and staying one step ahead of the other player. I hadn't read it before.
Want to make any edits?
Kind of, because I have some questions about it.
Go for it.
When you talk about the way you see the game, you really put the emphasis on the competition in Friendly. It's a duel. It's a battle. It's a competition. When I talk about the game, I talk about the Friendly in the competition. And I think it would serve us to spend, not necessarily right now on the mic because we have other things to talk about, but I do think it would be worth talking about, is it a duel or is it something else? A duel gives you this sense of like battling with swords or like fighting with guns or weapons or whatever your arms requirements are for your duel. Whereas when I'm thinking about two children laying in the grass in the summer night.
On guard.
I mean, maybe, but like, I'm not sure that duel for me is the right word there. And so I'd be wondering if we're really trying to develop the theme, because that is a critical component of the Cardboard Edison submission and judging criteria. I think we want to pick a lane to immerse ourselves in. Are we going to immerse ourselves in this like friendly competition versus this battle of wits in the way that we present the information in our game?
And I will say for the audience, Mark and I are talking before we submit, but when this episode airs, we will have already submitted. And I think that's a good point you're making. But I always feel like you think about the game as a co-op, you know, just laying there with your friend and like, hey, help me do this thing. Help me make the star over here.
No, because in my head, I'm like, oh, it's not a duel. It's a race. It's a friendly race. you know, last one to the fence has to buy the milkshakes. It's that kind of competition. It's not, Duel just kind of has this like high stakes, aggressive sense.
That's how I run to the fence. Man, I never ran to a fence like friendly. That was high stakes, man, if you were racing me to the fence.
We live very different childhoods.
Ben Logsdon beat me in the 60-yard dash in fifth grade. I'm still mad about it.
I believe you. But anyway, so a description of the game we have, we'll workshop, we'll revise. So with that in mind, we'll have our description. I think you have a great foundation in what's here. We'll workshop. Maybe you'll let me massage the flavor of the words a little bit, take a little bit of that edge off the sword.
You did a great job with the newsletter this month, let me say. Newsletter coming out at the end of this month. Again, listening, you missed it. You got to sign up for next month. Mark is an excellent writer.
That's nice of you to say. You've been doing a lot of writing yourself. The video had a script. Let's start talking about the video. Tell me, knowing that our game has a short playtime, I think that gave us the opportunity to do something different than what a game with like a 90-minute playtime would do. So set up the video for us and outline a little bit what the video had in it. What was the strategy behind the development of the video beyond meet submission criteria? Because I know you had more than that.
Before I get into that, let's take a minute and recognize Scott right now, who is busy editing the video, putting the final touches on it. He has also organized the rule book. He helped me with the script. He took the script that I wrote and made it better. He does not want any of the starlight, but he deserves a lot of it. When this video comes out and when you see our rule book, know that 90% of that was Scott. When we sat down to make the video, we looked at the previous videos that had been submitted last year for Cardboard Edison. So I went through and I watched almost all of them. I went on YouTube and I searched additional videos. I started with, what are other people doing? Cardboard Edison also has information on their website that kind of highlights and gives you direction and tells you what to do. For example, they tell you, don't make a how to play video. That's not what this is. We don't need a step-by-step how to play the game in order. So with that information, with what other people were doing, what they were recommending, we knew that we had to stay under 3 minutes, which we thought easy to do. Our game is pretty short. It's not a 90-minute play. I don't have to capture everything. So I wrote a script right down to how we would start using the camera as well. So in addition to the script, next to it would be straight on shot, you know, then it would be, you know, a pan of the components or a shot of the person I'm playing with for the B-roll to make the winning pattern. So we did try to like really sketch it out like we were actually putting together a storyboard for a video. I did that and then Scott looked at it and said, too close to how to play. Let's talk a little bit more about the feeling of the game. And because our game, Mark, is teachable in 2 minutes, I can teach you to play this game in 2 minutes. I can. It's hard not to just do a straight teach. We did explain almost everything. I think there probably would still be a little confusion on the star chart and how the board rotates and how the star chart doesn't. Even though we've said it in the video, I think you actually have to experience it to understand it. The other piece of that is, you know that I bought some lights, I bought a camera, we have the audio equipment already. I really wanted to put together what I thought was kind of a high production value video. I wanted it to be in 4K. I wanted it to look nice. And Scott did a really good job taking all of the raw video and then layering in and putting some graphics. So when I say this is how the blue tile affects a surrounding piece, he's put arrows in there to show on the screen, which I think is great. So to kind of sum up what our strategy was, it was to explain the feeling and the theme of the game that we're going for, knowing that not everything is there yet. We only have the icons from Tor. We don't really have anything else that's what we want yet for the theme. Even the logo that we created won't necessarily be the final logo, but it's like a step in the right direction. So we wanted this clean, high quality video that shows what the theme of the game is going to be and a little bit of how it feels to play. And then we did still want somebody to say, oh, I've got a good idea of how to play that game having watched this video.
When I watched the video, I think it captures a lot of what you're aspiring towards in making the pitch, making the theme pop, showing a little bit of actually how the game plays, and gave a nice little taste of the rules and how to play, which leads us into the third category that we needed to prepare for the submission, the rule book.
And this one was more you than me. And before we jump into the rules, let me just say, if you're listening to this podcast and you'd like to go watch our Cardboard Edison submission, you can find it on YouTube. You can find it in our Discord. Search the Misplay on YouTube and you'll find us. The rules, Mark, that was primarily you. You took what we had been using. So we've had a rule set that's been publicly available for a while because we've always linked it in our playing cards room. So the rules have kind of existed, but they were never refined. They were created initially for the First Exposure playtest hall, and then I brought them to some of our in-person playtesting. And it was meant just to very quickly tell people how the game sets up and how the pieces move. You took that and then started working on an actual rule book.
Well, I started with what you had written and created for First Exposure playtest hall. So I made a copy of that document and then went through and looked at how we would want to structure the different components of the rule book. So we kind of break down into, there's a one-liner introducing the game at the beginning,
which you rewrote, and I really like. You wrote, a friendly race to find your constellation in the ever-changing night sky. So use that word you talked about before, race, instead of duel.
There's a little introductory line, and then we went into the most important things we would need in a rule book. I decided to lead with the objective to make kind of bookends. Here's what you're going to do while you play this game. We define winning later, but we started with the objective of the game. And then we gave a components list. We wrote a stepwise setup for how to set the game up so that you're ready to play. And that leads us into our rules. The first rule being, two tiles will never occupy the same space.
I'm going to interrupt you there, because there was a conversation today I don't think you know about yet. We changed the layout from setup, we're moving to gameplay, from gameplay to winning, and then rules. So we've had that discussion with Brian and with Scott today to kind of change the order a little bit because we think it flows a little bit better.
Tell me more, because I'm like, how can you talk about gameplay if you don't know what you're going to do?
I think the idea here is that the rules are telling people that two star tiles cannot occupy the same space. Okay, sure. But what does a turn look like? When do you get star tiles? When will you have those? I think the rules coming before the gameplay poses a lot of questions that they don't know the answer to yet. The wild star tile counts as every color. We haven't even shown the blue, the orange, and the yellow star yet in the rules. So I think we wanted the players to understand what the gameplay was going to look like, the sequence of your turn, that you're going to choose a star tile, you're going to place it on an empty space, and then you're going to replace it in the shared pool. We wanted them to understand that before we started explaining the technicality of what happens when you go to put it onto the board, that the star chart doesn't spin when yellow goes down and rotates the board. The star chart not spinning is one of the rules, and I don't think that's relevant yet to them. So that was like, I think that was the driver behind it.
That makes sense.
I see the rules as notes. And I think that's what it was originally written in the set of rules we posted a long time ago. It was like notes. Notes is the wrong word. But these additional things that you need to know about how the game functions. Because if you don't know those things, the game breaks. You're stacking star tiles on top of other star tiles. Like, you wouldn't know that. You do have to know that. But I don't think you need to know that first. I think you need to know what a star tile is and see it.
That's fair. I think that tracks. I was never in love with those like rider phrases. I kept them because I knew we had to have them in there somewhere. So I think it does make sense to move them. So you said now it's set up. We move into gameplay. We talk about winning. And then you go into the rules where you define the actions that you'll be taking throughout the game.
No. I mean, I see it as the actions you're taking are all in gameplay. The rules are, unless you're grouping the rules into the star actions, whereas I see the star actions falling more into gameplay.
Oh, see, in my head, like the actions that you take are the rules that you have to follow when you play the tiles.
No, that's actually a question I don't know the answer to. If he plans to move the star actions into gameplay and just put the rules at the very bottom. I think it should be higher. I think star actions should be up there under gameplay.
I agree. I think there's something that I'm getting stuck on that has to do with like the nomenclature of the rule of the notes that you previously had, which I think is like, now I'm going back to, oh, why don't you just put them as notes at the end? But they are rules that you need to know in order to play the game. Like, it is a rule that the wild tile isn't going to move. There's something in the structure labeling that isn't working for me. I do like the idea of moving star actions up, because the star actions are more important than like the constraints, the rules that create the constraints that we're playing under.
When you were editing the rules, Mark, did you find what stood out to you in terms of what you had to rephrase or rename from our first version, where the version that I wrote that I didn't put a ton of thought into?
I know we did a lot of discussion of when to use thematically carrying words, like thematic vocabulary in the rule book. So when I was looking at the rule book and thinking about it, I was like, oh, you just call them tiles, but we want to make the theme pop in the rule book. And so now they're star tiles. I think referring to the patterns that we're assembling or the winning configurations that we're assembling, going into the rule book and calling them constellations is something that we've moved towards in the final rule book. I'm less the form and aesthetic person. And so when we were talking about the star charts, well, how are we going to distinguish which colors are available? Is it going to be a yellow card or is it going to be a purple card? So like those details, I think, are the things that have been the most nuanced pieces that we've been working with in the way that we're kind of collectively coming up with a style guide for how we're going to write about the game and refer to it.
So we went from a 2-page rule book to a 3-page rule book. Do you see a future where they get longer? You know, one of the things that I think about is the visuals. I think the thing that is most confusing to players is when the board rotates and how that affects the pattern that they're holding in their hand and what constitutes a valid winning pattern. When you have the T pattern, it is orientated to the star chart. I think that's the most confusing part when I do the teach, is how a winning pattern gets formed. One of the things that we'll think about going forward is, are there easy ways to show that in a picture? It's hard with words, I think. It's hard when I have the board in front of me and I'm showing somebody.
I know it's a problem, but I haven't personally run into it when I've taught it, because I think you've just taught the game in more varied settings. Like, I've taught it at like Golden Gate Game Makers and everyone's like, oh yeah, I get it. I love how the tile actions have the visual description to them now.
Again, Scott did such a great job being our graphic designer and making this rule book kind of pop. Just the way he included the fonts, the way he made the headings, the way he separated things. It's so clean and clear. And I know it's an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper and you've got a lot of space, and an actual rule book would be a bit smaller and structured differently, but he did such a great job with that.
The big hang up for me is in the setup. And when we talk about how to set up the star chart, I think that's the single line item that has gotten the most revision, has had the most non-agreement and the most variety in what we've tried to accomplish in the way that it's written. And something that I think we should still be continuing to work on, because I'm not in love with where we're at right now. I know we're coming down to the wire, but I think it's one of the things that I would highlight and say that description is something that we want to spend more time on solving for.
We've got 8 months for that. We have time to get the rule book wording how we want it. I think it's really good to identify those things that we know we need to tighten. And yes, that's one of them. And I mean, that plays into what I was talking about with winning patterns and the star chart and how the board rotates. That's crucial. And if you don't understand that, the game can be confusing.
I think that's the long and short of the rule book, mostly the long of the rule book right now.
Pretty short.
We spent a lot of time talking about it.
I know what you mean.
You know what else has been a long back and forth is something that we still haven't talked about yet.
That's the other thing.
Right. What's the name of the game?
I'm surprised we did this. We made it this far in the episode without giving it away. There's no edits. We didn't cut it out. We didn't accidentally say it at any point. Currents was our original name for this game when we were thinking a water theme. We called the game Currents. That's what we took to First Exposure Playtest Hall. After you came back from Gen Con, you had this idea for stars. And for the Board Game Geek Contest, we made a quick change and I called the game Starfold, just to have a name to submit it under. There was a short period of time when inside playingcards.io, you could see Tracing the Sky was the name of the game. Tumblers was a great name, Mark. We almost shifted to a lockpick theme. I love Tumblers.
The game that never was.
So as part of entering Cardboard Edison,
Oh, he almost did it.
I did. I swear I almost did. We wanted to begin establishing our game's presence. I think that's really important now that we're, you know, 8 months out from our crowdfunding campaign. Whether we make the final round of Cardboard Edison or not, everything downstream at this point requires the name. We're reaching out to artists to design the box and components and also a logo. We need it. We had to have the name for this game. Now, because Space and Stars is like this really popular theme, there's a lot of overlap with other games and other IP, including, you know, like games and movies and books. We settled on trying to capture that feeling of looking up at the sky with a friend in a non-dual way. Starfold didn't fit that, although I did try to force it at one point.
Never liked Starfold.
Friendlier skies, same sky. Mark, I kid you not, I fully explored the lyrics to Fievel's Somewhere Out There.
I'm going to have to tell you a funny story about that song.
Far apart, they say same bright star in that song, the same big sky. I really did explore that song. I combined a lot of words. We made a list. We made a second list. There was one, I honestly don't know if I wrote it on the list or if you wrote it on the list or somebody else wrote it on the list. But what I remember is it was highlighted. And it stayed highlighted. You put a comment. You said, I like this one. That's the name of the game. We chose.
I like this one.
It could work. No. Tell us the name of the game, Mark.
Under One Sky.
Say it like you mean it. Say it like you have to put it on video for the Cardboard Edison submission. Because that was hard to do.
Under One Sky.
Under One Sky.
Under One Sky.
Under One Sky.
I'll tell you the reason why I wrote that comment. I like this one. Because it goes back to the story that I've been telling you about this game for forever outside. I just want it to be a beautiful board with resin pieces and like a nice like wooden finish. It is this concept of two friends sitting under the night sky in the warm summer. You grew up in suburban New York.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in suburban Michigan. I'm really chasing that image of that warm, quiet summer night with your friends. And it's always under one sky.
I loved it.
The Misplay podcast is brought to you by Howlay Boy Games. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. We express our humble gratitude and recognize any level of support here on our list of sponsors. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors.
Orientated to the star chart. It is oriented.
He's so British on the show.
We looked it up. I can say it that way.
You can absolutely say it that way. It's still going to make me laugh every time because you do not live in Britain.